Can you hear me okay? Do I sound normal?
Yep, sound good.
I sound normal?
You sound normal.
Okay, okay. You'll never guess. Like, remember last time we recorded, I was sick?
Yeah.
Still kind of sick, but guess with what?
Great questions. Okay, guess with what? Is it a common illness or an uncommon illness?
In babies. I have an ear infection, Peter.
Okay. I don't think you had to throw the entire, you know. Is it only babies that get ear infections? I guess. Yeah, I haven't had an ear infection in a while.
That's what you hear about a lot. And I was just getting over the cold. And what I think happened, so we were both, my toddler and I were sick at the same time. And so he kind of, it wouldn't want to do much. We set up a little blanket for it downstairs on the floor, kind of in between the TV and the couch. There's our little fort.
Yeah.
I watched Frozen probably 15 times. Beauty and the Beast a good 5 times. You know, just...
Oh, yeah.
A lot of Disney songs stuck in my head. To be honest, it was nice to have him for a little break for a couple days where he's just low energy and we just sat there. And then we both... He starts talking about how his ear hurts. And I notice my ear, it feels like I got water in my ear, like after you swim and there's a little pain. We take the kid to urgent care and they're like, yeah, he has an ear infection. I'm like, oh, okay. And they gave him medicine and I'm like, are they contagious? And they're like, no, they're not contagious. But what would probably happen, we were both laying on the floor at weird angles to watch TV. And I think my sinus stuff.
Yeah.
My sinus stuff drained weird.
Okay.
So he's acting a lot better. I feel fine. It's just my it's still echoey in half my head.
Oh no.
And when I've been I think I'm talking louder than normal when I go places and talk to people. I think I'm like, it throws me off. Like I went to go to a Chinese place. Like, General Tsao's chicken for Matt. They look at me and it's like, oh, I think that was, I have a Visa credit card.
Okay.
But I don't know what the full amount's on. Can your machine do 2 transactions? And I'm like yelling and looking at me weird. So.
Oh boy. I was going to ask you, like, hey, how's your week been? What have you been reading? What have you been reading outside the podcast? That kind of stuff. But there's more to mine here. I remember ear infections being very uncomfortable. Are you close to crying? Are you close to...
No, the pain went away. I think it's fine. I really do think.
What do you...
researched it and asked the pediatrician.
Did you actually get seen by a doctor or did you just take...
No.
Okay.
I did homeopathic remedies.
And that would involve garlic and...
Garlic. Crush up a bunch of garlic and let it sit for 20, 30 minutes to let the allicin...
Okay.
And then I pour some tea in it. You mix it up. It's good. It burns going down. You feel fantastic, but you smell. So everybody in your life complains about how you smell.
Well, so you're talking really loud. You smell bad. Your ear hurts. What else?
It doesn't hurt anymore. Right now, it's just echoey.
Okay. You're echoey. Not to scare you. And this doesn't really apply to you completely. I once had a teacher in junior high. Stay with me. Who was went on a flight, I believe, to Hawaii, if I remember the story correctly. And you know, if you've ever flown before, your ears pop at a certain point, usually. What happened with this teacher is when they went to pop their ears didn't pop, and the pressure was just either... It was just off, right? Their ears never popped. They came back, ears never popped. And they had to go to the doctor. And I feel like there was some procedure with a needle where they had to stick it into their head and like leave the pressure. Because they had that echoing feeling in their head the whole time.
The whole time.
And that story has stuck with me for 25 years. And I always get a little nervous when my ear... Now you're coughing. So are you worried that your ears will never be the same?
No, because I've had water in my ears before and it feels exactly like that. So I'm just waiting for it to kind of leak out.
Okay.
I will tell you, I am a little worried because, you know, if you ever get a swimmer's ear, like you get water.
Yeah.
You hold your nose and then kind of breathe out, and you can feel the pressure, and I can kind of feel it start to tingle, right? And it's like, okay, maybe this will break it, but I can't go too hard because I am worried my eyeball's gonna fall out.
It does sound like you're dying right now, I will say, to the podcast listener and to your friend. I am worried about you. I think you need to drink more tea, and I'm not sure the garlic is doing all that much.
I haven't had the garlic in a couple days either.
Okay.
It's a way to get
rid of it. I do remember, I haven't gone swimming in a long time, but getting the water in the air, and then when you can release it, oh, that's a great feeling.
It's really great. So I keep waiting for that.
But is there, like, water? There's fluid in your ear.
I think that's what it is.
Right? My wife had to go to, I think she went to urgent care, or maybe her doctor, and she had a sinus infection or ear or something, maybe an infection, and they released the fluids in her ear. And they gave her,
I think that's what,
steroids, I believe.
Yeah, I think I might have to do that if it doesn't go away. I'm hoping. I'm using eardrops, and I'm hoping. And I keep tempted. I don't go too hard with the holding the nose thing because, like, I don't want my eyeball to explode.
Well, you could rupture a blood vessel in your eye.
Yeah, so I don't want to do that.
That could be a good first photo on Instagram. You holding a book, and your eyes are just bloodshot from
reading.
Just from reading. Have you ever read so much that your eyes hurt?
No, I just get tired. I read so much. I read so much that I get sleepy.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I always hate that. Actually, that's my least favorite experience of reading, is reading while you're falling asleep. I hate that.
I pack it in. I learned, like, I'm not going to retain anything. I'm sleepy. I need a, I don't know. I read laying down a lot of the times in bed. And that doesn't help. I need to, like, maybe sit up.
I think you need to sit up. I can't. I used to, my early days of reading, teenage years, I would read laying down on my side. Mm-hmm. And I always thought, this is really uncomfortable. It's hard to hold the book. I can't really read the words all that well. What am I doing? I'm doing it wrong. And then I just realized you just got to sit up.
Mm.
Yeah. Any other health ailments or... we started this Zoom call. You are wearing a wool cap. I'm wearing a wool cap.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not really sure what that pertains to anything, but any other ailments or any other fun stories, man? You're yelling in public.
Not really. That's just what's going on with me. It's really sweet with the kid. It was really nice to watch musical cartoons with the kid.
Are you dreaming?
No, but
in Frozen.
Frozen songs are stuck in my head to the point where I think it may be unhealthy.
I think that's every parent in the last 20 years. When was Frozen released? 10 years ago?
Pretty solid movie. Story structure-wise, that and Beauty and the Beast are actually pretty solid.
What about Frozen 2?
I haven't watched it.
What? Just you're doing the original.
We're at the whim of whatever the kid wants to watch. Okay. He gets obsessed with one thing, and it's over and over and over.
Hey, can't fall.
But I was going to say, I think it's very sweet, you know, laying there watching it. And sometimes he'll turn over and, like, look at me. He's, like, face to face and look at me, and he'll say, "Hi, Dada." And then he will literally sneeze into my eyeball. And it's just, it's like, this is why I'm always...
You're giving your immune system a real run through, like an oil change almost.
Yeah, and he also coughs in my ear, so I figure something's going, like, whatever's going on with me.
I'm surprised you don't have, like, pink eye for some reason. Like, what's pink eye? That's like
well, that's a little grosser. I'm glad I don't have that. That's when
that's what kids get, though. I remember as a kid,
yeah,
get pink eye. You can only get one. I don't know.
I know what it is. It's just a little gross.
I don't know. I just remember.
It's when you get fecal matter.
Is that really?
But it comes from, you know, if you...
I'm going to have to label this episode, like, you know, serious.
But it's not. It's like particles, right?
That's not... That can't be pink eye, right?
That is pink. It's, you know, you scratch yourself.
I didn't know that.
Scratch your eye.
What was I doing? What was I doing when I was 10 years old and I got pink eye?
It's not, you know, but that I remember being thrilled. I got pink eye when I was 10 and I got to go home. But
oh, you can't be around anybody because it's...
I wasn't dangerous. Like flu sick. So you didn't have to lay in bed. I got to go play outside and I got to stay home from school. It was like...
The problem is, when you close your eyes and fall asleep, you can't really open your eyes ever again.
That's not true.
It's, I mean.
Ever again?
Well, you know, a couple days. I'm going to Google that guy really quick.
Well, that's what it is. We don't have to dwell on it.
We don't have to dwell on it? Okay. I don't like the Google images. They always make me feel like, oh, God.
Yeah. We don't need to take things that way.
We have a busy episode too, so
that's why it was a joke in some Judd Apatow movie, like the adult stoners got pink.
I don't take my medical advice from Judd Apatow.
No, but it was because they were farting on each other's pillows.
Oh, okay.
Got pink eye, right? So that's the general. That's how you get it.
All
right. Right.
Well, and on that note, welcome to There Will Be Books, a podcast about books and Matt's illnesses. I'm Peter, joined as always by Mateo. See, the reason why I said Mateo said Matt is because I texted my wife today and said I have a podcast tonight with Mateo, and I thought it was just like something that will spice up my life.
That's my Spanish name.
I looked it up. I thought, is that Matt? Is that Spanish for Matt? And it just said, it didn't say Mateo.
In grade school, in second grade, we got like a country to study, and mine was Spain, and so my Spanish name is Mateo.
I like it. I had a French class. You had to take a French name, and mine was Pierre.
See?
I think I took Spanish for one quarter, and I don't remember my Spanish name. But I remember Pierre. It was very creative of me.
Well, that's what you do. You transliterate your name to...
Some people chose completely different names.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway. Matt, this week... We have a little bit of a hodgepodge, not really a hodgepodge, a dual month addition to the TBR.
Yeah. Do you want to just fill the listener in on kind of what we're doing here?
So
I'm excited.
We're almost done with January, so that seems a little silly to add books, but we are going to add. And we're going to add books for February. Now, February is the shortest month, I believe. This year is a leap year, or was it last year was a leap year? Anyway.
No, this year's leap year.
This year's leap year. So one day extra, but still, you know, shortest month of the year. We're going to add some short works to the TBR.
Mm-hmm. And
a novella could be a short collection of essays, could be a short collection of poems. Nothing too crazy, right? Nothing. Yeah. We're not adding a 500 page book about, you know, vampires in Romania.
No. Hey, so no, here's how I approached. Here's kind of my thinking on it. We usually do some short stories in February as a way of catching up and doing the little February is the short month. And I like doing that. And our TBR is backing up, and we want to do a January. We don't ever want to skip a month. We're going to keep going. Yeah, so I was thinking, what if we did a smorgasbord episode?
Smorgasbord.
And we do is January, February. And just bring a ton of short works. And then you know how you go through a line at a cafe or something, or at a buffet, and you kind of you got a tray. Mm-hmm. So we'll have our tray, and then we'll do if we nominate something we want and is doable, throw it on there.
Okay.
I think as long as a novella, I don't have any novellas. I have some essays and literally short stories, not even collections, short stories.
Just a short story. Okay.
A short story. And some of my essays are like 2 or 3 pages long.
Oh.
You know what I mean? So it's like, I think some of these will be like little appetizers, little dinner mints. We can tack them on to the end of episodes. So if I'm excited about it, I don't know if the listener cares or rolling their eyes like, oh, these guys are doing another selection episode. But I'm excited. I think we can add a lot to the TBR, but also kind of keep it manageable, you know, keep things going.
I have got 4 novellas, a collection of essays, a collection of poems, and a play.
I have 16 things. But they're all short. They're literally no collections. I'll have... a short story.
That means I have to write down 16 things on my little notebook.
Essay.
Okay. Well, let's get into it, because this is going to take us a while. And for the listener, get out your pen and paper. I got mine.
We can narrow it down. We're obviously not going to pick all of them.
No.
But the novella will be like an entree. A lot of mine are short.
Okay.
A lot of mine will just be the side dishes.
Well, let's get started, because that's, 23 things we got to talk about here? Pay attention, everybody. Pay attention. All right, man. Drink that tea. I want you to lead us off.
Done. Okay. Well, let's start from the left. All right. Hey, I first heard of this short story. I knew who the guy was, but I never read him. Still haven't. But the short story is on my list because I was reading a Charles McCary spy novel.
Okay.
And the two spies were talking to each other about this short story. They're like, oh, yeah, have you ever read Footprints in the Jungle by Somerset Maugham? They're like, oh, that's excellent, excellent novel about, you know, because I think he was a spy for a little bit, if I'm not mistaken. They made reference to that. And I think it's the story where, like, the hunter, the big game hunter, goes on a hunt. And then by the end, you kind of figure out he's being tracked by, like, the hunters become the hunted. It's like a classic story.
I'm trying to think of what mom I've read. I think I read the most. Yeah, I read Of Human Bondage.
Yeah, the whole novel.
A big old book. I read, I kind of liked it. I have no idea what this story is about, but
Big game hunter.
Big game
hunter. He goes hunting and he figures out eventually the tracks.
Hemingway-esque almost.
I think he was before Hemingway. Anyway, he has a ton of short stories. I have the complete short stories of Somerset Maugham, volumes 2 and 3, not the first one.
Almost like Billy Joel, but reverse.
Friends of Life. So. Anyway, he's got a ton of short stories, but the Footprints in the Jungle.
I like the title. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
Sounds good. All right. You're going to do a couple before I go.
Let's see. Joan Didion. Ooh. Slouching Towards Bethlehem, the essay collection.
Yes.
He's got one in there, tiny little 10-page essay called John Wayne, A Love Song. I think it's a little ode to John Wayne that Joe Didion wrote.
John Wayne, A Love Song. Okay, I like that.
Right? And just a little, like, hey, 10 pages. Pretty easy.
It's true.
All right, let me do.
What are your thoughts on John Wayne?
You know, I loved him when I was a little kid. I kind of went through a phase where I kind of like, oh, looked down on him, the big, dumb American brute. You know, Hunter S. Thompson wrote a pretty funny essay making fun of John Wayne. I was kind of there. But I was watching El Dorado and Red River and stuff. Been like rewatching old movies. You know, I kind of like him again. Okay. I was coming back around. He's a good actor. I like those old Westerns.
I don't think I've ever watched a John Wayne movie. Anyway.
That's insane, Peter. That really is insane. Your movie gaps are just...
He did Westerns, right?
Insane. Anyway.
Give me another short collection. Boom.
I got a collection of Hermann Hesse short stories.
Okay.
Haven't read them. Don't know. Went through the table of contents looking for the coolest title. There's one from 1907 called The Wolf. Wolf. Don't know what it's about.
Okay.
It is only... It is literally 3 pages.
Okay.
So, you know what I mean? We could just pick it as an appetizer or something.
Hit me with one more. Hit me with
one more, and this may be the longest one I have. Out of all 16, I think it's technically a novella. It's about 60 pages.
Oh, wow.
From this, I might have mentioned this book before. The Unknown Thrillers of Louisa May Alcott.
Thrillers. I don't think you have mentioned this before.
In addition to Little Women, just like thrillers that she wrote for fun. So this one is called The Mysterious Key and What It Opened.
The Mysterious Key.
And What It Opened.
And What It Opened. Okay.
And I can't get any, the whole, you know, the stuff about the content on the back is all about how nobody knew Louisa May Alcott wrote thrillers until this was published, blah, blah, blah. So I don't know what it's about.
Am I going to be a lot of your nominations? I feel like are just going to be feel and the title. How are we feeling about the title?
I feel about it. A couple I've read before, a couple I'm going to insist on.
Okay.
But nothing too long. I'm coming like short, like little, you know, little okay. bits.
Should I do one of mine?
Yeah.
Okay. 1958 novella, almost like a turning point in this author's career. A very famous movie was adapted from this novella a few years later. Norman Mailer called this writer the most perfect writer of my generation. And he would not have changed two words in the book I'm about to nominate.
1958 movie.
1958, very famous movie.
Some
contention over its publish the publishing history of this work. Takes place in New York, Upper East Side.
1958.
Kind of
two words.
Probably the second most famous work of this author. All right. Any guesses? Okay.
Is it Tennessee Williams?
It's not Tennessee Williams. The novella I'm nominating is Breakfast at Tiffany's by Truman Capote.
Okay.
Yeah.
I know the song.
Most famous character, Holly Golightly. I believe I'm pronouncing that correctly. One of my favorite songs is a song called Breakfast at Tiffany's.
I just mentioned I like the song. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a great song. Someone made fun of me once for liking that song.
It's a little cheesy.
Within the last 5 to 10 years. It's a great song during my youth. And I thought that would be almost a lot of my nominations are almost filling the gaps, or you know.
Sure.
These are gonna be mostly bigger works. I will say that. But Breakfast at Tiffany's. Great title. Great title for a work, I think.
Yes.
I don't know. I always thought it's good. Tiffany's. Tiffany's has that prestige, that air of, I don't know if Tiffany's is the, I imagine it's not the, with the jewelry store.
I always pictured it as a diner, but it's probably an upscale. In Cold Blood's a better title than.
In Cold Blood is, yes.
Yeah.
But anyway.
I like it. Okay.
Okay. Did you know Mailer thought so highly of One Truman Capote? I didn't realize
no.
that.
I know Vidal and Capote had a...
maybe that's why Mailer liked him. Possibly. Do you want me to do another one, or do you want to continue on with your...
Do another one. Do one more.
This one is, I believe I saw... This is my play. This has been adapted many times. The adaptation that I think I saw... I think the actor has recently been canceled. If I'm not mistaken, I didn't do too much research into this French actor. But I had never read the play, and I vaguely remember the movie. And there's a newer adaptation that I just realized was done 5 years ago. The play I'm talking about is Cyrano de Bergerac by Edmond Rostand. Sorry, can't read my own handwriting. I remember seeing I can't remember the French guy. He
Gerard Depardieu.
Depardieu.
Yeah.
He has gotten some. I don't know exactly his legal issues. It seems to get into it now, but the Peter Dinklage was in a recent remake or adaptation of Cyrano, where he plays the main character. Have you read this play, Matt?
No, I haven't.
Are you familiar with the play?
But yeah, a little bit.
With a noble soldier who's also a poet and a musical artist, but he has a large nose, which causes doubt that he can kind of express his love for the one and only Roxanne.
He's insecure that Roxanne will love him, so he has somebody else be a stand-in, and the stand-in says his beautiful poetry, right? And it's...
Yes.
Steve Martin, I think, did an adaptation of this. He had a comically large...
His was Roxanne, right?
Yeah, Roxanne.
There we go. So those are my first two, Breakfast at Tiffany's and Cyrano de Bergerac.
I like those, Peter. A
couple of big names. All right, Matt, let's continue on with short story essay corner.
Let's see here. What do we want to do? Okay, let's... I think I know how I'm going to do
we
this.
We got Alka, we got Hess, we got Didion, we got Mom.
These are the one. These next three I'm going to do are going to be to kind of tempt you. I think it'd be tempting to you, and I maybe want you to pick one or two.
Okay.
And then the bulk are really short things. Some I might insist on. We'll just see. You know.
Okay.
I think your stuff that'll be like the appetizer, and so we'll flop. We'll
What's the main dish then?
One of yours. We'll slap a few of yours down. Right. Okay. Breakfast at Tiffany's, a play or something. And then mine will be the rest of the things, the stuffing, the cream corn, the weird cranberry stuff. Like that's how we'll approach, because we're doing 2 months here.
2 months.
Okay, let me see. Have you ever read Hunter S. Thompson?
I have not.
Okay, you should. He's a lot funnier than his reputation. Kind of, he's got a reputation as the fear and loathing, wild and crazy drunkard guy, and he was that. But he was also incredibly well read, and his earlier stuff especially is hilarious. He's like a comic writer, in addition to, just the guy shooting guns at 3 in the morning or whatever. So what I want to do, because the Super Bowl's coming up, he wrote a little 20-page essay for Rolling Stone back in 1973 called Fear and Loathing at the Super Bowl.
Oh.
Right? And it's just a fun, it's his little, his style. I believe it was the Raiders. Doesn't matter. The Raiders ever played the Dolphins? It's the 1973 Super Bowl. He went there at a fun, crazy time. I think
Yeah, undefeated season, but it doesn't matter.
it's 73 from the 72 season. It might be. It might be. But 70, late 60s, early 70s, when he was really in his stride, I think this would be a good little.
Did he have many titles with fear and loathing in dot dot
No,
dot?
just a couple.
Okay.
It was a phrase. He actually took the phrase from Thomas Wolfe,
Okay.
the Lacombe Angel guy, not the so he thought, and he thought, he's like, I wasn't like plagiarized. I wasn't taking it for my own benefit. But if I like, he figured he it caught on as his thing. He's like, if I kept saying like, oh, it's actually Thomas Wolfe, he's like, people are gonna think I mean Tom Wolfe, and it'll just be confusing. So he kind of just appropriated it and it became.
Okay.
But no, it's actually, this is from a collection called The Great Shark Hunt.
That is a very enticing nomination.
I think, and it's not that long, 20 pages. It'd be
Okay.
fun and timely and Fear and Loathing at the Super Bowl.
Okay.
All right. Hey, here's another. We're doing short stories. I've actually read some of this guy's short stories. It's good. They're weird. They're almost like adult fairy tales, surreal and dreamlike.
Okay.
American guy who lived in Morocco.
Oh, I know this.
I wanted to choose one I hadn't read, so I
Let's
flipped. You know who it is?
I
Try
read
this.
one of hold
Say
on.
it before I say it so you get
No,
credit.
hold on, hold on, hold on.
He's a composer.
No, I've read it. I didn't I read one of his works. I didn't
You
really
didn't
love
like it.
it.
And but okay. I love short
Say
stories.
who it is.
Paul Bowles.
Paul Bowles,
Yeah.
yes.
Wrote Up Above the World.
No, he what else? He wrote
Thousand Camels in the Courtyard.
Oh, you're missing the big the Sheltering Skies, what I read.
Sheltering Sky. Yeah. But anyway, he's got a short story called The Hyena.
Oh.
It is 3 pages, 3 pages long. But and once again, like The Wolf with Hess, cool title. Hadn't read it. It's good. There's like, they take place in the desert. They're very strange and surreal and compelling. I really like his short stories. So, The Hyena.
Nina. Fable.
They fable like.
Okay.
Dark and twisted fables, or I don't know, it'd be fun to
Okay.
just if we go that way. I think I mentioned this before, but I figured I'd bring it up again because it'd be fascinating to kind of go through and talk about. It's a little 25-page essay by the historian Michael Parenti about the death. It's called The Strange Death of President Zachary Taylor, a study in the manufacture of mainstream history.
Wait, can you see the strange death
Of President Zachary Taylor. And just
president?
leave it
Okay.
because the story on how Zachary Taylor died was he gave us, it was like a warm day and he ate a bunch of cherries and milk and died.
I'm not sure a lot of people know how Zachary, that fable or that story about how the old
Well,
ZT died, but
yeah, but Parenti like demolishes that. He's like,
okay.
people don't, like, that's not how you die. People don't.
Eat cherries and then
That's not what
maybe
happens.
he ate the pits.
No, he didn't eat.
Arsenic.
And even if you did, you'd have to eat so like a bucket full. Anyway, the point is like that was he was president at the time when the slavery issue was boiling up.
Oh, yeah.
He makes a very compelling case that like he was obviously poisoned. Somebody tried to assassinate him, do the slavery stuff, and it's just for any number of reasons, that was just wasn't the official story.
Okay.
This is
All
a
right.
very good essay. It'd be fun to delve into.
All right.
Michael Plenty.
I'm gonna do two of mine.
Yeah.
Same author. One's a collection of poems, one's a collection of essays. Matt, you like dogs, right? You're a dog guy, right?
Yeah.
This first one is a collection of poems. It's called Dog Songs by Mary Oliver, and it's a celebration of the connection between humans and dogs. I don't see how you could go wrong as we delve into poems. I've always wanted to read Mary Oliver, kind of a famous contemporary poet and essayist. And the essay is from 2016, and it's called Upstream. And it's, from what I gather, it's sort of about the beauty and the mysteries of both the natural world and literature. One of the reviews called it part revelation and part instruction. In those, I don't know. It seemed very almost a good combo to pick. I don't know if you would be into it. These might be more of my kind of taste, but a collection of poems about dogs and a collection of essays. The essay collection is not that long, a couple hundred pages, so that would be a main course, but not we're not talking about 300, 400 pages. I don't know. I thought that would be any initial. We've never really done poetry on this
Yeah.
podcast.
Oh, I'm gonna be honest with you. Poetry makes me a little nervous.
Why? I don't think it's going to be too daunting.
I just want to talk about, I like
The
dogs.
beauty of poetry, what it means, how you feel when you read a poem.
I need to go buy dog food.
Let me see if I can pull up one of the poems from this book and read it to
Oh, man. Like the
you.
literary equivalent of a guy pulling out an acoustic guitar.
Hey, we'll just
Just read you some poetry. Oh no.
let me tune it really quick. Let me tune it. That's a longer one. I can't read that.
The first few lines. Does she rhyme? I know she is. I never read her.
Man, this website just had an Emily Dickinson poem pop up. I don't want that. Hold
I
on.
like Emily Dickinson.
You do? I want to take you for an Emily Dickinson man.
Yeah,
Look at
I like
that.
the older poetry that rhymes.
You do like older poetry. I don't.
I like
I listen.
Byron. I'm talking like Byron and Shelley and like the all the cliched William Blake, Dickinson.
Okay, let's see if I can get. How about this one? It's called Little Dog's Rhapsody in the Night. He puts his cheek against mine and makes small, expressive sounds. And when I'm awake or awake enough, he turns upside down, his four paws in the air, and his eyes dark and fervent. Tell me you love me, he says. Tell me again. Could there be a sweeter arrangement? Over and over, he gets to ask, I get to tell. I miss poetry. I'm a poet man. This might be
I'm
my
a
year to
poet.
go back to poetry.
You
Oh,
should. You should
anyway.
tell me some of the poetry you wrote. I'd read that. We'd pick that. You nominate yourself. I'd vote for it.
Anyway, Mary Oliver.
All right, Mary Oliver.
Probably not gonna pick her, but I don't know. I have an itch to read a poetry collection. So
Good
maybe
combination.
I go off on my own with my
Read
two
some poetry.
dogs,
Yeah.
pick up dog songs and as they bark at squirrels, I read poems about dogs. Anyway, all right,
Dogs,
Matt,
dog park.
you have more than I think you have nine more to go.
Maybe 10. I forgot one.
Oh my
Do it
gosh,
real quick. I'll do it real quick. All right.
gonna lose you're gonna lose your voice. I can already tell right now.
This one I might insist on. I think you'd like it. It's a fun story. It's by Mr. Neil Gaiman. It's called, and it's from, I believe it's a short story collection called Trigger Warning. I would highly recommend it on audio. He reads it himself, but it's called The Truth is a Cave in the Black Mountains.
Truth. Cave.
Yeah, it exists as a standalone little like illustrated book, like a kid's book, but it's not a kid's book. Just that one story, not the whole collection.
Okay.
It's good.
I have a mixed, I have a mixed history with Neil Gaiman. Neverwhere, I read, liked it quite a bit. American Gods, I thought it was terrible. One of the worst books I've ever read. So,
I think you'd like this. I think I'm trying to maybe correct your
no,
opinion.
I don't think you can.
American he's Gods one is. Of the you like Neverwhere.
American
you,
Gods
you
is
didn't get you didn't
in
get
canon the, of books I don't like.
You didn't get the mythology stuff, which is fine, but
600
like
pages of that. No,
it's true. Neil Gaiman is one of the best living storytellers alive, right?
Okay. Hey.
So I'm just trying to just gently, and you would like, I'm not, you know, it, you'd like it. It's a good little story, a little twist, little mystery, little fantasy.
That is The Truth is a Cave in the Black Mountains.
Yeah.
Okay. Put that down right. Look at that. All right, hey. Another story.
All right, hey, another fun author who you like, British, maybe the funniest person to ever write, at least in English.
PG Woodhouse. Okay.
Got a bunch of short stories. This is one of the Uncle Fred stories, which I think you will find delightful. Uncle Fred is. Was Galahad in Summer Lightning? Like Uncle Galahad, he does.
Oh yeah. Okay.
Uncle Fred's like that—a jaunty, confident older man. It's fun. It's called Uncle Fred Flits By.
Uncle Fred Flits By.
Flits, Flits By. Uncle Fred is Pongo Twistleton.
Okay.
Of the Drones Club's uncle, and he tells the story of Uncle Fred popping by. And the mayhem that ensues. It's good. It's funny.
I have a random collection of P.G. Woodhouse short stories that I don't know exactly the rhyme or reason for the collection. And I'm curious if that's in it.
He's got so many. And they really are fun to just dip into every now and then. You need to feel like be in a better mood. You know, a little
it's true.
Pick me up.
All right, Matt. Give me another one. Give me two more.
Let me give you my other funny one. The guy who did Roxanne, Steve Martin. Do you know he wrote?
I think so. I know he plays the banjo.
Well, I'm talking about writing. He wrote Shop Girl.
No? Oh yeah, that was that popular when we worked at the bookstore? It was kind of vaguely around that time, wasn't it?
Yeah. This pure drivel, probably 25 years old now. It's just a collection of essays, goofy little things. It's so funny. I got the audio version when I was in high school and just listened to it like over and over. It's very funny. There's a tiny little story in here, just four pages, called Dear Amanda.
Dear Amanda? Okay. Dear Amanda.
I kind of want you to read it. Just like little letters to Amanda from page 26 to page 29. Dear Amanda,
you really did go for
very short.
You weren't lying when you said short stuff.
Dear Amanda from Pure Dribble.
Okay. Very funny. All right, Steve Martin. Any more humor, Matt?
No more humor. The Gore Vidal essay that introduced me to Don Powell was on my list. What's it called? It's from a book collection called The Last Empire. It's called Don Powell, Queen of the Golden Age.
Don Powell, Queen of the Golden Age.
Published in the New York Review of Books. But I figure I'd throw that out there too, because it's how I heard of Don Powell. And he makes a compelling case for why you should read her, why she's so good, you know?
Okay. All right. Let me do, this is a novella. This is taught in schools quite a bit. And I escaped it somehow. I never read it, but I know it's definitely one of the staples of, I think, high school, I want to say. Could be earlier. This is an author I've read a couple of their works and enjoyed them quite a bit. Takes place, this book was published in 1947. Explores man's purpose as well as greed, defiance of societal norms, and evil. It began as a movie script until it was kind of later flushed out more into a novella, and that would be The Pearl by John Steinbeck. One of the only works of John Steinbeck that doesn't take place in this normal kind of California area. This takes place in Baja of Mexico. The Pearl by John Steinbeck.
I was, you know what I'm going to guess?
Is that where you were going to guess?
No, I was going to guess The Moon Is Down by John Steinbeck.
Oh, look at that.
Also doesn't take place in California. Yeah. Yeah. I never got into Steinbeck too much. Don't dislike him, but...
Grapes of Wrath was one of the first major, on my own, I just read it. I believe I was in high school. Just on, this wasn't part of school. Read it. Really enjoyed it. I kind of want to go back to it at some point, maybe relatively soon. I read Cannery Road, but there's, I don't know why I didn't kind of keep reading John Steinbeck. I like his style. It's too depressing, you say?
That would put you off to him. Yeah.
I don't know. I think that would be a, you know, I don't know. I don't have too much more to add to The Pearl by John Steinbeck. Short little book, not very long. I think I have an old edition kicking around here somewhere. I bet you do too. And if not, you could probably find one for a dollar or two at a used bookstore.
I don't own it, but I'm not worried about finding it.
Okay.
Post too. All right. All right.
Okay, John Steinbeck. Do you want me to do one more?
Yeah.
This author I have not read. And it's a I wouldn't say it's a major gap in my reading. And I feel like, and I'm curious your opinion about this, but do you ever have an author you haven't read, but the type of person that keeps pushing this author on you, you kind of find slightly annoying, or you think they're kind of fake, or they're kind of, I don't know. Does that make sense? Like,
oh yeah,
you're connecting this kind of reader to this author, and that the author kind of gets ruined for you. That kind of
happens with Jonathan Franzen a lot.
Okay. I don't know why this happened for this author.
Okay.
And this might be a very like personal, like specific reason for me.
Yeah.
Like where I had like a kind of a friend of a friend who was like, oh, this is, you like to read my, and just kind of went off on this author. And I was like, eh, I don't really, this guy's kind of pretentious. Maybe I don't want to read this author. But
gotcha.
Put that aside, this novella came out in 1981. A man returns to the town where a baffling murder took place 27 years earlier. A murder that was foretold, so to speak. It was inspired by real life events about the author's godbrother. The novella I'm talking about is a chronicle of a death foretold by Marquez.
Oh,
you know,
I didn't know Gabriel Garcia Marquez was like that for you.
Yeah, I don't know why.
I didn't know that.
I there were people just be like, oh, what, 100 years of solitude?
Solitude, yeah.
And it's just like, I don't know. For some reason, just got pushed. I pushed him aside. I don't know why. I'm not supposed to do that as a curious reader.
I've always wanted to read The General and His Labyrinth, so I wasn't like opposed to him, but there is something about 100 Years of Solitude and honestly The Pearl and some of those other books that they make you read in high school and a certain type of earnest person really likes that I'm like, I just kind of make you like, eh, I don't really want to. And it's not really fair. It's not his
Not
fault
fair, yeah.
That he's taught in high school. Like, yeah, you know, and I think same thing maybe with Huck Finn and Tom Sawyer with Mark Twain. People don't appreciate it for what it is because it's just like forced on them in school. But I do know what you mean. I do know what you mean.
Yeah, it's
yeah.
So maybe not every reader has, but yeah, it's just you're a bookish person, you encounter other bookish people in your life, and then there's certain people you're just like find a little bit off putting because you're not sure if they're really that bookish or they're just kind of putting on a I'm really into. I think Cormac McCarthy sort of suffers from this a little bit.
Well, and you know who else? David Foster Wallace.
David Foster Wallace.
Yeah.
And sometimes I don't really know why Marquez, but it's like a very specific thing. I don't think this is like a universal, like, or this happens a lot with this author. I don't know why I had to put this on here. Because I have never read anything by him. So
me neither. And that's a gap I need to fill. I can't go through life not.
The book sounds very interesting. It's like,
how long is it?
It's not very long. I could pull it up.
Nah, okay. Just okay. I like that.
I wouldn't say it's like 120 pages, maybe.
Okay, that's doable. That's a main dish.
That's main dish.
Main dish.
128 pages. So.
Okay.
I think he wins the Nobel Prize soon after this. or right before this. It's right
or
around
something else, right? It's
yeah.
100 years, and death in the time of cholera and 100 years of solitude are his big ones.
Yeah. This is a short little work.
Okay.
I like the quotes get highlighted. And I don't know. Yeah, I think it would be a fun book for us to read. Maybe not. It's not a fun book, but maybe a lot to talk about. And maybe we'll become, I will become the type of reader that I was thought was annoying.
You just got to get over your prejudice, your pride and your
yeah,
prejudice.
Yeah, got to get over my pride and prejudice. All right, Matt. Do you want to finish up all your stories, or how many do you have left? Because I have one more novella left.
One more. Let me do a couple more.
Okay.
Let me see. I want to, okay. All right. Maybe a general sense of what I'm. Let me see. This is a cool title. I read it a while ago. It's called Cows, Pigs, Wars, and Witches. The Riddles of Culture.
Hold on. It's cute. Cows.
Pigs. Wars and Witches.
Okay.
It's fascinating. It's like a sociology book, but you know, accessible, not academic. A lot of interesting stuff in it.
Who's it by?
Marvin Harris.
Marvin Harris, okay. How do all those things relate to the
Well, the one I want to talk about is called Pig Lovers and Pig Haters. There are certain cultures, you know, desert cultures where it's forbidden to eat pigs, right?
Yes.
Certain other cultures, like I think in the Philippines, around, you know, the South Pacific Islands, where the pig is like the main dish and staple of the culture. You know, the whole society is built around pig worship, eating pigs, all that stuff. You know, the typical roasted pig with an apple in its mouth. And the essay is kind of about why that sort of thing would have came about. What is it about the cultures that forbid the pigs versus adore the pig? It was really fascinating. And one of the things, because I never understood, like, okay, why would you forbid eating a pig? And one of the answers that people always say is like, oh, trichinosis, right? But it's like people that they know how to cook food. They don't eat their meat raw. You only get trichinosis. Like they would cook the pig. The theory here, and it was pretty plausible, is that when you're in a desert and food resources are scarce, pigs eat tubers, nuts, whatever. They root around for stuff. And it's remarkably similar to what humans eat. And so desert cultures, if you're nomadic and wandering through the desert, you can't let people keep animals that compete for the same foodstuffs, right? You have to make it a law that no, you can't drag a pig around, because that'll be, so they have sheep and camel and people, like animals that don't eat the same types of foods. It's really good. It's like that sort of thing, right? Like, why would you, for, you know, it is a plausible rendering of why that stuff's,
I like that, a little bit, right? Of a cultural
food concept. It's like, oh, of course.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So anyway, that's, and it's just the one, the essay on the pig. Pig Lovers and Pig Haters.
Okay.
Yeah, it's like 30 pages.
It sounds fascinating. I'm not gonna lie.
Oh, yeah, it's, yeah. The whole book's like that. But this one, I would be shocked if we picked it. I don't think we will. I just kind of wanted to bring it up because I saw it. Have you ever heard of Randolph Bourne?
I've not.
He is an intellectual, like born in the 1880s, died young in like the 1920s, I believe. You ever heard of the term "war is the health of the state"?
Vaguely, maybe.
That was his. Okay. He coined
that was his baby. I like it.
Maybe. Yeah, this would be the most political thing I'll nominate. It might be the most political thing we ever read if we picked it. Like, yeah. I don't think we would. But this little 15-page essay is called "The War and the Intellectuals."
Okay.
I'm
going to stop you right now. We're not going to pick this.
I know. Well, I said that too. But I just want to kind of like.
I mean, the pick stuff sounds much more interesting.
It was this was written in 1915-ish. So World War I had started, but Bourne's an American, and you know, it's there. Everyone's kind of debating: do we join the war or not? Right?
Yeah.
And he's left, kind of a left-wing guy who was anti-war. And he's kind of, the essay's about all his like fellow left-wing people who are all of a sudden supporting the war. And he's like, what is going on? I thought, so this is about kind of like pro-war propaganda and what happens, like people's principles, like they're in theory, but when like the drums of war start beating,
interesting,
everybody goes along. It's timely, but like I say, we probably won't.
It's true.
But it is basically him going like, what, like what it, what it, what are we doing here? What's everybody doing? And he's my birthday buddy, Randolph Bourne, same birthday as me.
Okay,
that's honestly kind of why I like him.
All right, how many more short works do you have here?
Four.
Four.
Let me do one more.
You no, do two and more, and then we'll end on your last two. Do two more.
Okay. This one, I might insist on this one.
You might insist
because I'm curious.
I think the title of this episode might be "I might insist."
I'll insist on three or four. This was, it's literally two pages, right?
Okay.
So we can handle it. It's from a guy, I don't know if you've read or not. It's another guy who high school, being on high school reading lists might have ruined him for people. And I need to read more of him. But this story, it's two pages. It's literally two pages. It's from a collection of, it's called Imperial Messages, collection of modern parables. But the story is by Franz Kafka.
Oh.
It's called Before the Law by Kafka.
Before the Law. Okay.
Two pages. I want this to be one of them. So I'm curious as to your take. Because it's like a glass half full, glass half empty type thing. Your take on it.
Okay.
It's like, okay, was that incredibly depressing or is that strangely optimistic?
Yeah.
I'm curious as to your, yeah. So I definitely want to read this, Before the Law.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's start next to that one. All right, give me one more, and then I'll do my last one, and then we'll end with your final two.
All right. Well, this is another Gore Vidal. It's, I tried to pick just fun ones of his I thought you would enjoy. This one is called Edmund Wilson, this critic and this, oh, hold on. Edmund Wilson. It's about Edmund Wilson. This critic and this gin and these shoes. It's a review of Edmund Wilson's diaries, and it is strangely encouraging and fascinating about like just who Edmund Wilson was. He was a voracious reader, really interesting guy, like wanted to learn everything for himself firsthand. You know, he learned when the Dead Sea Scrolls came out. His experience with kind of Russian literature. And okay, so first of all, he taught himself Russian so he could read Russian literature without a translator. Like that's how much he loved literature. You know, Edmund Wilson was he was a short story writer, made his bones as a critic.
Mm-hmm.
Right? He was a big 20 from the 20s to the 60s. He was like the big literary critic in America. Anyway, so he taught himself Russian so he could read Russian without the mediation of a translator. That experience taught him not to really trust translators too much.
Oh, interesting.
So when the Dead Sea Scrolls came out, he taught himself Hebrew, right? And then to keep himself sharp, because he drank a lot and also like made his living off his mind, it's a weird contradiction or whatever, but he was worried about falling off because of the drinking, and rather than stop drinking, he taught himself Hungarian because that's supposedly the hardest language for an English speaker to learn.
Oh.
So the Gore Vidal essay is just kind of like, with a Vidal essay, he kind of muses about what he's reading. It's a review of the diaries, but also kind of musing on what it's like to be a writer. It's just a fascinating portrayal of Edmund Wilson.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So we have in that collection, we have Pigs, we have War and Intellectuals, we have Kafka, and we have Edmund Wilson, Learning Hungarian.
Yeah.
All right, Matt. My final novella is a big one. This is the one I had number one on my list. 1864. A gap in my reading. Speaking of Russians, I don't really have to give too much background into this. The novella I'm nominating is Notes from the Underground by Dostoevsky.
The entire thing?
Yes.
Or
it's short. You're thinking of something else.
I have that book. I think maybe mine is Notes from Underground and Other Stories. So it would just be Notes from the Underground?
Notes from the Underground.
Okay. Hmm. I like that. Because I was going to...
sort of philosophical discussion can be had.
It's a gap.
It's a gap. It's a gap for me. I'm not embarrassed that I haven't. I never feel embarrassed I haven't read something because there's so much to read, but it's definitely a gap. Yeah, you can get a addition. You might have something with other, and there's.
I have. I'll,
there could
I'll,
be a fun thing where we could read different translations because there's.
Yeah,
this,
yeah.
So I see one here that was kind of the famous Pevier and Volkhonsky translator duo. We've done a couple of his works. It's 136 pages.
That's doable. Okay.
Very doable.
All right.
That's my last one.
All right. I like that.
All right. Close this out, Matt.
They're both two more, both by the same author. Let me see. You've never read Christopher Hitchens, right?
I've not.
Okay. Well, these you should. He's a lot of stuff. A lot of stuff's political. I really like his essays on literature and books. Really hold up despite all his political stuff. They're very good. It's honestly he's how I discovered Flashman. And Saul Bellow and Kingsley and Martin Amis. And, you know, so I have a special, you know, fondness for Hitchens because he led to a lot of my other stuff that I like to read. It was him writing about those books. I think Woodhouse, honestly, too, P.G. Woodhouse. So it's through reading him that I read all this other stuff that I love. So anyway, I want to do, let me see. The first one, this is a long essay. It's called In Defense of Plagiarism.
Hmm.
And it's kind of what it sounds like.
Okay.
It's only 7 or 8 pages. First published as Steal This Article in Vanity Fair in 1996.
Okay. Sounds provocative.
Yeah.
So we have and what's the last one?
I'm going to insist on this one.
Okay.
Right. Short little one. I think it should be the first Hitchens you read. I think it would endear him to you.
Okay.
2 pages. It's called Prisoner of Shelves. And it's about having a ton of books and not wanting to get rid of them.
Ooh, I like that.
Prisoner. Just a beautifully written little. I think you'd really appreciate it. Be perfect for the podcast and the. So I'm going to insist on that and the Kafka, the little 2-page things. And then we can deliberate from there.
All right. I'm okay with that. So let's add Prisoner of Shelves by Christopher Hitchens.
Yeah.
And Before the Law by Franz Kafka. We will add those two.
Little like dinner mints. They're like little, like the little, you go to a restaurant. And then they have the big bowl full of like mints on your way out. That's what these are. Just little mints on the way out.
I really want to do Fear and Loathing at the Super Bowl. Ernest Thompson.
Throw that on there.
I think that would be fun and timely.
Yep.
Red Thompson. So sweet. That would be, if you're okay with that from your list.
Oh, yeah.
And then I've never read Joan Didion, so I'm kind of leaning towards John Wayne, A Love Song.
Okay.
By Joan Didion. Anything else you want to push for or you think I would like? You mentioned the Neil Gaiman. I've never read Didion, so I kind of have a little bit more of an urge to read that. But
we could do that. It's only 10 pages, too.
John Wayne, A Love Song?
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's go with Didion on there.
Okay.
And then let's do yours and then we'll circle back. We'll see. That we're putting a tray on the buffet. So we got some side dishes.
Went through there and now let's.
We're at like 45 pages. So we're still.
We're still not. You know, yeah.
Yours, I like Breakfast at Tiffany's. I like The Marquez and I like Notes from Underground.
Yeah, I realized I wrote Notes from the Underground. It's Notes from Underground. I don't know why. My brain added the.
So
I apologize to the reader and listener.
Are you good with those, like, winnowing down from those three. Do you want to?
I think you would like the dog poems, but I understand why you don't want that.
I'll read a dog poem or two officially off the books. We can do that.
So Breakfast at Tiffany's. You like the Marquez, and you like Notes from Underground.
And see, I need to give Capote a chance. I can't just not like him because of like Third Hand.
Because of Vidal?
My favorite author didn't get along with him. I need to do my own.
I don't think I've ever read anything by Truman Capote. Now that I think about it.
I haven't read In Cold Blood.
Because I had a copy of In Cold Blood given to me by a friend of mine. I don't want to say it's like a first edition, but like an early hardcover edition that I greatly appreciate, but I never got around to reading it. So,
you know, had you picked that, I wouldn't be interested for whatever reason, not in the mood.
In Cold Blood.
But Breakfast at Tiffany's, I'm kind of curious.
Me too.
Do we have enough room on the tray to do the Dostoevsky and...
No, we don't. We can't do both.
Come on. It's all short stuff.
That.
Think so?
You're getting sick. I'm getting distracted by it. I'm reading a book about the lead up to the French Revolution. What are we doing? What am I doing? This is more the issue.
Yeah, you keep reading library books.
I know. It's a
problem. I'm done with the story.
I'm getting there. I'm getting there.
Well, if we have to do one, we got to do Dostoevsky. But I think if we did two, we'd throw Breakfast at Tiffany's in there. Right? How do you feel?
You're bad.
How do you feel? I mean, if we're doing one, it's got to be Notes from Underground, right?
Yeah. Let's add that.
Okay. Okay. That's not, that's enough. We're doing 2 months here. So we got a novella and 40 pages of like aperitifs here.
All right. Let's add Breakfast at Tiffany's too.
Okay. One's January, one's February, and then mine will just be garnishings and aperitifs. I think earlier I said appetizer when I meant main tray.
Yeah, I was letting you go.
So this is we're at the Golden Corral and getting a corn dog in Breakfast at Tiffany's. And then we're getting a thing of steak or ribs or something for Dostoevsky.
This is good. I think I'll call this episode Dostoevsky, Capote, Didion, Thompson, Kafka, and Hitchens at the Golden Corral.
And we should add a couple more short little ones.
Okay.
Just short little guys, right? Some cherry cobbler, some pudding, pickle.
Let me see here. Let me look at this list of you have here.
Anything else?
What's the Neil Gaiman about again?
Oh, it's good. The Truth is a Cave in Black. Let's do that too.
Add that. And.
All right, I guess I won't press for the Hess or the Paul Bowles or anything. You want to do Uncle Fred?
Not really.
Yeah. Okay.
You have all these. I might have to borrow some of these from you.
No, I was figuring you would. There's no sense buying the Kafka, the Diddy, like all the little two-page ones. I'll bring them over with your casserole dish. Okay. Sorry, I've had that for a while.
The Hyena could be. That's a short one, right?
4 pages.
Let's do that one.
Add the Paul Bowles.
All right. So we've added two novellas, 1, 2, 3, 4, 6 short essays, or these are all essays, correct? Short stories. Some of these are short stories.
Short stories. The Didion and the Kitchens are essays. The Thompson is an article, technically.
Okay. All right, there we are. We are not clearing up the TBR in 2024. We are making it on two nightstands. You're going to need two nightstands for all these books. But that's okay.
Some of them are very short.
Some of them are very short, and Honestly, what is life if you're not adding a good chunk of new books to your TBR every month or 2 months in that case? It's boring. Hopefully, the listener out there, they have their pen and paper and they could write, jot down some stuff that we didn't select and kind of pique their curiosity on some subjects. But this is the most we've had. It's not long. It's just the number of titles we've added.
Titles, yeah, it's not a big deal.
Page length, the historian exceeds what we just added, right?
Oh, far. Yeah.
But I don't know. That was fun, Matt. That was the you're looking at me like I
Oh,
would
it's
think
fun for
this was
us.
influenced by your ear infection and has caused madness in the podcast, but I'm okay with that. I'm not going to do a list of
Something in my head,
what
but yeah.
we have upcoming because it's we have some big books coming up, but I like the mixing up our TBR with some shorter works. So, all right, Matt. Any other final housekeeping or otherwise?
No, look out for our. I think most of the patrons have their votes in for our Golden Age mystery.
That'll be fun.
So get those in. We'll do that here soon. And then we're going to knock off some of the other big works. It's not just all going to be book select. We're gonna knock off some book review episodes here soon.
And I think a while ago, your brother mentioned that he liked it when we kind of disagreed, maybe, possibly. And for him, just be on the lookout because I think there might be a book coming up that we're gonna, I will have some strong takes on. And yeah, I'll be a hot take merchant. You might, I don't know where you stand on this book or whatnot, but I will have my takes ready. Just curious where you are. Matt, it's been fun as always. I hope your ear feels better. I hope you don't get pink eye. That would be bad. I didn't
I'm
know
not
that.
worried about pink eye.
Do not worry about pink eye.
I'm worried about maybe a needle having to be in my ear or something.
That would be bad. I'm sorry I put that in your mind. I did get a notification from my email that three more of my library books showed up. I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know why I'm doing that. My library report will be coming at the end of the month, though. So for our patrons who support us there, they'll have that. But probably need to get that under control a little bit. The library books are. I add these books in the future, and I don't realize they all sort of come out
Same.
vaguely at the same time. I had these books months ago, I almost feel like the library should be like, hey, do you really want three of these books right now? But not really, not really. But such is my problems. Matt, it's been fun. We will talk next week, probably about a book review. So be on the lookout for that. We'll talk to you later.
Bye.